Let's go in-depth on Hawkeye sports with the Des Moines Register. It's time for Hawk Central on 1460 KXNO.
Happy Wednesday, Hawkeye fans, and welcome into a special media, Big Ten Media Days edition of the Hawk Central Radio Hour here on 1460 KXNO and 106.3 FM. I am Chad Lystico, your host, as always, from the Des Moines Register, coming to you from Lucas Oil Stadium in Indianapolis. Day two of Big Ten Media Days are in the books. We are on from 6 to 7 p.m. tonight, and there is a ton to discuss on this program, as you might expect. Coming up in our third segment tonight, I did want to tease, we'll dig into kind of the growing animosity inside the Iowa-Purdue rivalry with the outstanding journalist Tom Deanhart, who covers the Boilermakers. But for now, we'll get to my Hawkeye Beat colleague of the Des Moines Register, Kennington Smith, who is holding down the fort in Iowa City and kind of hitting some other angles out of Big Ten Media Days. We'll get into some of those as we go. But Kennington, how's it been going so far for you this week? Welcome.
Thank you. Now, it's been good here in Iowa City. It's been a busy week. Obviously, there's a lot going on. I'm enjoying what you're doing out there and enjoying watching Big Ten Media Days from the television screen. So, you know, a little bit different this year. I was in person with you last year. Just, you know, we're still putting out some good content, and I'm looking forward to a great conversation tonight.
Yeah, Kennington kind of broke down the depth chart. We will get to that in our second segment. But before we get to all things Hawkeyes that have kind of come up here in the course of 2 days, Big Ten expansion continues to kind of take the headlines, Kennington. Commissioner Kevin Warren pretty much indicated and told some national reporters on the side that expansion is not done. He sees this as kind of a five-year window of change in the Big Ten and nationally. Obviously, last year with Texas-Oklahoma, he would say it was year one. Now you would say USC-UCLA maybe in the year two here. So I think we're probably going to be looking at more expansion in the Big Ten beyond 16 teams. At least that's what he indicated. And that's what the reporting seems to indicate as well. What do you make of kind of what you heard, not only from Commissioner Warren, but some of the other stuff that has come out in the past couple days?
Yeah, I don't think it's too surprising. I think that we understood that there was going to be a little bit more expansion coming just across college football in general. I think that you know, the more that expansion is becoming a talking point, the more I think that everybody understands it's shifting to a point where there probably are going to be a handful of super conferences or mega conferences, and everybody else is kind of just figuring out where they fall into that mix. So I don't think it was too surprising that he confirmed that there is more expansion coming. I think that the conversation about who's going to be joining the expansion, I think, was the more interesting subject at hand. You know, it's been reported that there were going to be some teams in the mix, and I know we're going to get into that in a second. So that's kind of where my attention focused to. I think that, at least for me personally, I assumed that there was going to be more expansion. Maybe I didn't expect him to just say it so outright this quickly, but I thought that it was coming, and I'm just really interested in kind of who are the teams that are in the mix and how they're going to fit into this landscape as well.
Brett McMurphy of ActionNetwork.com, he reported through sources, and he's usually on the ball, Oregon, Washington, Stanford, Cal, Miami, and Florida State. So six schools that the Big Ten was interested in, schools that, quote-unquote, add value to the conference. That's what Kevin Warren is looking at. And it's interesting to see kind of the – at least the opinion change, I think, on Kevin Warren. It's like he kind of got a really bad reputation back during COVID for how things were handled and maybe bungled at the Big Ten level. But now all of a sudden he's in a real power position and seems to be exerting that power and basically kind of picking and choosing. Obviously Notre Dame I didn't mention, I don't think, but that's obviously at the top of the list of a program that would add value to the conference. CBS's Dennis Dodd, I saw, came out with kind of the Notre Dame and then also Oregon, Washington, Stanford, Cal, but not the other two. So that to me makes a little more sense. I don't know. I'm not quite ready for a Big Ten that stretches to Miami. I guess it'd be good for recruiting maybe, but picking up, you know, kind of the best of the Pac-12, especially if you can get Notre Dame. Like, I've you know, Notre Dame and Stanford to me would be a perfect pairing just because of the academics. They're natural rivals to begin with. And then kind of the same thing with Oregon and Washington. I mean, the two remaining best programs in the Pac-12. But I don't think you necessarily need them either. I mean, I'm fine with the 16 they've got, but I think if you're going to add two, Notre Dame, Stanford would be a good combo. Or Oregon, Washington would be a good combo, but I don't know. We'll see what happens. But I've got mixed feelings on it, I guess. But it almost seems like to me the Big Ten is just trying to absolutely kind of wipe out the Pac-12, and in the process, kind of damage the Big 12. Because then, you know, what does the Big 12 have left to kind of grasp at in the future if the Big Ten, you know, snaps up some of the top remaining teams, if you will.
Right. Yeah, I think that, well, first, I agree with you on the Miami and Florida State. That seems a little bit too far out in terms of my geography. Stanford is a school that I've been very interested in the terms of the expansion and kind of where they fit into where, let's say, the Big 12 goes and gets teams from the Pac-12. I don't know if Stanford will be a fit there. So I was just kind of wondering what's going to come of Stanford. Maybe I thought they were going to be an independent, possibly, if the Pac-12 were to break up. So I think that them and Notre Dame would be a very good pairing. I like Oregon and Washington as well. I just think that especially in football and in basketball, especially with Oregon, that they would, you know, add something to the Big Ten track and field. They would definitely add something to the Big Ten. So I think that those, you know, four to make a 20 would be, you know, a good move for the Big Ten. In terms of what happens to the Big 12, I think that for them, it does kind of leave them in no man's land. I think that their next priority will obviously have to be to go get Utah and add them into the fold, them and BYU being natural rivals. I think that would be a nice addition to the Big 12. But those four schools adding into the Big Ten mix, creating a 20-team league, I think would put them, you know, a really powerful position. And, you know, in terms of Kevin Warren, it is really interesting to see the kind of, I don't know, like bravado or swagger is the right word. I think that last year, the Big Ten media days, there were a lot of questions coming his way about what's the Big Ten going to do? How's the Big Ten going to transition into the future under your leadership, especially post-COVID? And I think that just this year, you know, I'm not there personally, but I just feel like he's walking with his chest out a little bit more. Like he has to feel like a sense of pride and accomplishment that he was able to kind of make this power move for the Big Ten.
Yeah, apologize there. We had Ken Ingram was breaking up a little bit. The internet, not the greatest here at Lucas Oil Stadium, so I apologize for that. But good answer, man. Appreciate that. All right, man, let's dig into the Hawkeyes aspect of Big Ten Media Days. And I kind of wanted to start with, before we get into kind of the nuts and bolts, the depth charts, the little bits of information that we kind of picked apart from Kirk Ferentz, I kind of wanted to start with where the week began, Kennington, and that was with the Big Ten media poll. Jack Campbell named preseason defensive player of the year. That was it was pretty resounding too, a pretty significant margin there. So that it's interesting to see how he is seen across the league. And I've got a big piece on Campbell that just posted earlier today that I hope you'll check out at hawkcentral.com. Kind of digging into who he is as a person and whatnot. He was super impressive on the podium yesterday. Just an amazing young kid, just an imposing young kid. But the real headline, I think, from that poll is that Iowa was, as usual, it seems like, picked second in the Big Ten West, Kennington. I know you and I had different ballots, and we can get into that. But here is a quote from Sam Laporta here that I thought we could kind of build a discussion off of, because when you look at it, you know, Iowa brings back an amazing defense, we think, you know, probably the best punter they've ever had. That's arguable, but certainly we think defense special teams are going to be good. We think the offense will probably be better. And this is a team that won the Big Ten West a year ago and gets Wisconsin at home this year. So Iowa being picked second, getting three of the 36 first place votes, in Wisconsin getting 31 of the 36 first place votes. Sam Laporta thought that was a little bit curious, but also understood it. Here was his quote. He said, I feel like it's the same conversation every year where it's like you never pick Iowa for some odd reason. And we always find ourselves I'm sorry, and we always find a way to give ourselves a chance. I don't know what that says about our program. If you look at what at the guys coming in, we may not have the 4 or 5-star recruits, but we always still find a way to win 9 or 10 games. That's a testament to the program that Coach Ferentz has built and the people that are a part of it. Kennington, I thought that was a really interesting quote because it is kind of I've had that same discussion with other media members. Why is Iowa only getting 3 votes? And I will say I was one of the 3 that did pick Iowa in the West. I don't think you did, but I'm just curious. I mean, is it why wasn't Iowa? I'm not saying they deserve to be picked first, but the margin was notable to me, and I think that stuck out to a lot of people as we kind of hear from Iowa and realize I don't know if Wisconsin's a world beating team this year.
Right. Yeah, I think that at least in terms of this year's team, and I can't really speak for why Iowa hasn't been picked to win the West in the past. But when you look at this year's team, I just think that there are so many questions about the offense. And I think that from the outside looking in, outside of just believing that the team is just going to perform better offensively, there really isn't anything tangible to point to that says the offense is going to be better going into next year. I think that age-wise, it's going to be a young offensive line. It is going to be a young wide receiver core. We're not really sure what's going to happen with the quarterback position and if there's going to be an elevated play. So I just think that generally, I think that there's more faith and trust in what Wisconsin has offensively. And it's not like they lit up the scoreboard either last year as well. I'm not saying that they're, you know, Ohio State offensively. But I just think that, you know, from the voters' perspective, and I also have Wisconsin, you know, winning the West. But I think that for me, it's more just like question marks about the offense and how much of a step forward they're going to take from last year to this year.
Yeah, certainly the almost a group think, I think, at times it's just like, okay, well, we're going to pick Wisconsin and we're going to pick Ohio State on the ballot, and that's that. You know, it's going to be a crazy West Division this year, in my opinion. I think, you know, Wisconsin, you know, should have a great defense. They obviously bring back Graham Mertz and Braylon Allen, who's an amazing running back. And they're always going to have a good O-line. They're always going to be really tough, and they're well coached. You know, but then you look at the receivers. They're not going to be huge question marks at wide receiver. You look at Minnesota. This is a team that got the other 2 first place votes in the West, and you know they bring back a core of really solid players in Tanner Morgan and Mo Ibrahim and Chris Ottman Bell and a dynamic center, kind of like Iowa last year in a way. And, you know, they should be they kind of, you know, have the experience and have sort of they've almost gotten there. And, you know, is this the year for PJ Fleck? I mean, a lot of people do believe in what he's got going. And picked 4th was Purdue. And that's a team that I think we'll get into that with Tom Dienhardt a little later. That's a team that's super dangerous and has a beneficial schedule. And the best quarterback in the West. And then you tack on Nebraska. Which, you know, always comes into this event with a lot of optimism, Kennington. You know, they were picked 5th, but the betting markets, as I wrote yesterday, you know, list the Huskers as the second best team or the team with the second best chance to win the West. They got a ton of incoming transfers. You know, they were so close last year in so many games. So those 5 teams right there, I think, are maybe seen as a little bit stronger. And then you got Illinois and Northwestern. Boy, Northwestern, it's just hard to dismiss them in an even year under Pat Fitzgerald. I mean, they won the West in 18. They won the West in 20. Iowa hasn't beaten them at home since 2014. Iowa finally gets a chance to break that streak. That's crazy that they've had so much trouble at home with the Wildcats. And then, of course, Brett Bielema. I mean, you wrote about them last year, Kennington. This is a program we think is doing the right things. They posted some big wins last year, beating Penn State, beating Minnesota. And, you know, obviously gave Iowa all it could handle last year, and that was without Bielema in Kinnick Stadium. So I guess just, you know, as I go through all those teams and what we heard this week, were there any teams that maybe you were higher on before the week or lower on before the week that you changed your opinion on, I guess, as this week of interviews kind of progressed?
I think that the team that I was lower on that I feel like I'm coming away more impressed with is Northwestern. And for me, I know that you didn't get a chance to see this live at least, but when I was watching it on TV, you know, they had the breakout TV sessions with the players at the television stand outside of their breakout sessions. And one thing that the players spoke to about why Northwestern was not successful last year, but they had been in the years prior, was they felt like there was a sense of complacency in the program, that they had reached this limit, and they did take Ohio State to the brink in that Big Ten championship game in 20, and they took their foot off the gas in 21, and the results, you know, showed. And I think that for them to have that accountability, and then for them to say that they went back to what made them so successful in those even years that you're talking about, and there was much more heightened urgency and attention to detail in this offseason. They're very motivated to come back and perform well and win the Big Ten West again and potentially win the Big Ten championship. I can't remember which player, but one of them did say, you know, we were in the Big Ten championship game not too long ago, and we felt like we could have won that game. So the confidence that those players had, and the kind of direct pinpointing of what went wrong last year and going back and correcting those things this year, leads me to believe that Northwestern is going to be really improved this year. You know, are they going to compete for a Big Ten West championship? I didn't think so originally, and I'm still not sure that they are, but I do think that, you know, as low as I voted them in the West, it was pretty far down the list. I think that they do have the potential to be much more improved than I originally gave them credit for.
That's interesting. Appreciate that insight. I did not catch much of Pat Fitzgerald yesterday, unfortunately. So I would say the team that I was maybe down on coming in and a little higher on now would be Minnesota, just because, I don't know, just, I knew they lost a lot on the offensive line, but they seem to be pretty confident in what they've got up front. And that's a huge question for Minnesota. And then the re-addition of Kirk Sriracha as the offensive coordinator. I'm just talking to a bunch of people here who kind of know that was a huge loss in 2019. That was a dynamic offense that year, obviously, with Rashad Bateman and Tyler Johnson, a receiver, in addition to Ottman Bell. But this is a team that, you know, brings him back after a 1 year experiment in Penn State. And then a year in West Virginia, he comes back to the program to kind of, breathe new life into that offense, which was the problem last year. It's essentially, it just could not move the ball downfield beyond the running game. And we saw it in Kinnick Stadium that Minnesota has had a real solid running game and kind of chewed up the clock of what, 40 minutes of time of possession in Kinnick. So that's a team I think maybe to watch this year more so. I picked them fourth in my ballot, but it's just so close. I mean, you could WNL it differently and move those top four or five around pretty easily. And the thing I point to here, Kennington, and I haven't come out with my exact wins and losses yet. I'll have the Big Ten predictions in this Sunday's paper. But, that Minnesota game this year for the Hawkeyes comes at such a interesting time, because it's after Iowa hosts Wisconsin, and then it's at Minnesota, and then it's hosting Nebraska. So you get three straight trophy games there, and not to mention that a trip to Purdue, which again we'll get into later in the show, starts the month. So Iowa's November is crazy, and we might not know anything about the Big Ten West until November. So yeah, I would say I'm higher on Minnesota. Maybe a little higher on Nebraska. Maybe I'm falling for the, you know, banana in the tailpipe here again. But I just think that they've got talent. They actually have a special teams coach now, so that should help. And I don't know. Maybe I'm souring on Wisconsin a little, which I hate to say because I know that'll come back to bite me. But that's kind of where I'm at.
In terms of teams I'm souring on, I'm not really sure if I have one just yet. There's a few teams that I think I'll be curious if they're going to be able to maintain that same level of play that they had last year. One of them particularly is Michigan State, the way that they attacked the portal a year ago, and a lot of their key players, Kenneth Walker, namely, came out of the portal, being able to replicate that same success. I know they went into the portal and were very aggressive last year along with their recruiting class and the higher expectations. They're not going to really going to looking to see what Mel Tucker and the Spartans do this year. So that might be the one team that I could probably say at the top of my list that I'm like, I'm not really quite sure what's going to happen either way. In terms of the schedule, you know, it really is interesting how it broke down, where it's almost kind of like the first half of the season and then the second half of the season, which starts at Ohio State, and then the rest of the games go Northwestern, Purdue, Wisconsin, Minnesota, Nebraska. I mean, that is a pretty impressive gauntlet down the stretch. I think that
Iowa's got to know a lot. They got to be at least 5-1 going into that Ohio State game. Have to be.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree with that. I think that, you know, there really is a potential for them to, you know, really be undefeated. I think I said this on Twitter that the Michigan game to me feels like the Penn State game last year. I think that there's a very good chance both of those teams will be undefeated by then. It very well could be a top 10 matchup. For Iowa was to win that game, they go win at Illinois, and then the bye week going into Ohio State, you know, depending on what happens in the rest of the conference, that could be a top 5 matchup at Ohio State, and that's just going to put you know, huge magnifying glass on them, and really is going to set the tone for the rest of the season. We saw what happened last year where Iowa experienced great success, and, you know, the spotlight was on them, and then they faltered a little bit, losing two games and picked it up at the end. I think that there's a great likelihood for them to be put in the very same position this year should they be successful in the front half of the season going into the back half.
All right, lots of little stuff emerged here in Indianapolis, including a new Iowa depth chart. Probably the top line theme for me was Kirk Ferentz optimistic about the Hawkeye offense. Kennington Smith and I will discuss that and more next on Hawk Central here on 1460 KXNO 106.3 FM.
Everything you need to know about the Hawkeyes. It's Hawk Central with the Des Moines Register on 1460 KXNO.
Welcome back to Hawk Central Radio here on 1460 KXNO and 106.3 FM. I'm your host, Chad Lystico of the Des Moines Register, along with my colleague on the Hawkeyes beat, Kennington Smith, reporting from Big Ten Media Days in Indianapolis. Kennington, I would say, you know, I wrote about this yesterday. That was kind of the top line thing I wrote about the Hawkeyes, is that Kirk Ferentz, you asked him about, hey, are you really optimistic about this offense? And yeah, he is. Here's what I'll say. He likes what he's seen from the offensive line. He pointed to the bowl game last year as the most notable improvement of the year, from the Big Ten title game to the championship, or to the Citrus Bowl. And then he's seen those young guys take that next step. Now, obviously, they don't have Tyler Linderbaum back, but I think he likes the talent that they developed up front. Kind of, again, pointed to the Cody Ince and Kyler Schott injuries as really killing them last year. And also kind of pointed to just bad matchups at times. You know, Aiden Hutchinson, George Karlaftis against those young tackles really burned Iowa. So he likes the O-line. He says, yeah, I'm really optimistic about the run game. I think they really like those running backs. Kennington, the Williams boys, unrelated. But he, by the way, before I forget, he did say that he expects a couple of those true freshman running backs to play, and Caleb Johnson and Jazzian Patterson. So at least he's not afraid to let them play, and I think at least one of them is going to have to. And then he really touted the quarterbacks. He said he's seen improvement. And the fact that they actually have two quarterbacks, and just that there were a lot of makeable plays that they just missed on last year. So bottom line, you throw that all together, it was just, I felt like Kirk Ferentz, to me, Kennington, was just kind of making a statement. I think he's probably tired of hearing us kind of bash on his son as OC. You know, is ready to maybe just give people a little hope about this offense. And that's also something we heard from Spencer Petras. You remember that a couple weeks ago, Kennington. He's bullish about the offense. Sam Laporta, I talked to him yesterday about it. Same thing. Lots of little tweaks. They went back to the chalkboard. I don't know, just a lot of stuff where, hey, you put the pieces together. Let's give them a chance to show it. See what this offense does.
Yeah, I think that the most encouraging thing to hear if you're a fan is that they truly went back to the drawing board and broke it down and thought, you know, what can we do to improve the offense without getting, you know, too much away from who we are, which I think is what Sam Laporta said, reading this quote: new plays, new concepts, different ways of doing things in small ways while still not too far away from the basics of Iowa football. So I think that the thought of like tearing down the offense and creating something new is still pretty far out. But I think that there is some middle ground in recognizing that what they have been doing hasn't been working, and that they're trying to be more open about being more explosive on offense and creating more plays and scoring more points. And I think that the addition of John Budenmeyer is really telling in this, like, and Kirk saying that, you know, they tried to recruit him once to the school and it failed. So being able to bring him on into the fold, even as an analyst, it has done well, especially with Brian, you know, transitioning into quarterbacks coach and offensive coordinator. So, you know, I understand the optimism in that they have tried to embrace change, and they feel bullish about the fact that the changes that they've made are going to work. And we didn't get a chance to see it in spring. You know, it's been well documented how many injuries they had offensively. So we haven't really had a chance to see it with our own eyes. Hopefully when we get to the Kids Day scrimmage in a few weeks, we'll start to see a little bit more of what these players are saying once they get into fall camp and get some practices in. But I don't really have a problem with the optimism about the offense. I would have to, you know, at least commend them a little bit just for recognizing that there was a problem and trying to make some changes within their comfort zone to put out a different product in the field this fall.
Good stuff, Kennington. And yeah, the Budenmeyer question did come up. He has been added as an analyst, obviously the ex-quarterbacks coach at Wisconsin, you know, giving Iowa a little intel, and they really like the marriage there between Brian Ferentz and Budenmeyer. And you know, it's no problem getting a, you know, guy from Wisconsin on your staff. I think that's probably helpful too, given the troubles Iowa's had with that matchup. So yeah, he will be on the staff this fall. Obviously won't be on the sidelines, but as an analyst, you know, he's been a big help. Let's put it that way. Yeah, let's dig into the depth chart, Kennington. You wrote about that. It came out yesterday. Certainly, I don't think we were expecting any bombshells on there. I'll throw it to you since you wrote the story. What stood out to you, I guess, just the very top thing to you from what you saw in the depth chart? And then I'll get into some of the things that that I saw.
Yeah, I think that for me, some of the big takeaways that I said is in the secondary, Reggie Bracey making the move to number two at free safety. We haven't seen him on the two deep. Brennan D. Fernandez also making a move on the two deep as well. I think that is highlighting the fact that there were a lot of injuries last in the spring in the secondary, and it allowed them for a chance to show what they can do. And, you know, it's manifested itself into them appearing on the two deep. I think that it was also interesting that freshman Drew Stevens made his way onto the two deep as backup kicker. That's one position that I think is going to be very critical this fall. Caleb Shudak was so reliable last year, scored so many points when the offense kind of faltered in the red zone in close range, and he was just so consistent. So I think that Drew Stevens early enrollee being able to make a move on the depth chart is telling, and I think that that's going to be a position battle to watch going into the fall. Then I guess my third takeaway would just be the competition at center with Logan Jones and Mike Mislinski. It's unfortunate for Mislinski, the fact that he missed spring, because had both of them competed, I don't know how Mislinski would have been the starter. He probably, you know, would have the work that he did last year on the scout team and the momentum that he had going into spring. So I think that that's going to be a competition to watch. I don't think it's over.
Yeah, let me kind of build on what he was saying. You know, at quarterback, you know, Ferentz did say it's still going to be a competition. I mean, Petrus is going to go out there with the ones, but he very much believes that they have two good quarterbacks in Petrus and Padilla. Yeah, at center, to build on that, Mislinski, you know, Ferentz sees him in the top eight or top nine on the offensive line. So it's going to be either Jones, Mislinski, or Ellsbury at center. But Ellsbury listed as the number one left guard. If you want to go left to right, you got Mason Richmond, Tyler Ellsbury, Logan Jones, Connor Colby, and Jack Plum left to right. That's four sophomores on the Hawkeye offensive line, and a right tackle, a fifth-year senior who had some troubles last year. So it's going to be a young group. Certainly one of the names that jumped out on offense, will stay on this side of the ball momentarily, was Alec Wick. He is the number four receiver. They list four. The three you would expect, Keegan Johnson, Nico Reganey, Arlen Bruce, the fourth. I think we expect those three to kind of be their core three guys. But Alec Wick makes the jump, you know, ahead of a Deontay Vines, ahead of a Brody Brecht. You know, I don't think we expected Jacob Bostic to be on here this fast. But Ferentz said he's got a knack for making plays, and we've seen this before. And that also dovetails into you maybe asking, where's Jackson Ritter? He was in the top six last year. Well, Ferentz said he is out for the year with a medical issue. Also out for the year, offensive lineman Justin Britt, recurring knee issues. They are done for the season already. Those are the only two injuries Ferentz had to report, but Wick will be kind of an interesting name to watch, Kennington, and also Caden Weechin, a guy we've talked about on the program as kind of raising our eyes, I guess, in the spring. All right, let's move to the defensive side of the football as we are kind of running out of time here in this segment. You mentioned a couple names. I'll say I'll start here with maybe a little bit of a surprise on the defensive line. Ethan Herkett, the young man who was injured severely in week one last year, reappears. We had heard he was looking good. He looked great from what we saw, and it was just a really unfortunate injury. The kid from Cedar Rapids, Xavier, to see him on the depth chart just adds to Iowa's, I think, rotation at that position. And then Lucas Van Ness, you know, still listed as a backup defensive tackle despite leading the team in sacks last year, and we think he's going to be a defensive end, so kind of a weird situation there. But I kind of expect Van Ness to still end up on the end, and probably Aaron Graves to end up in that defensive tackle rotation. But that's how they list it right now, with Wagoner, Shannon, Lee, and Evans, your starters, Herkett, Van Ness, Y.A. Black, and Deontay Craig as the backups up front. Kennington, yeah, bringing back that, now. There he is. He's back, folks. Go ahead, Van.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, I'm here. In terms of the defensive line, a takeaway that I have is Y.A. Black being on the two deep, which I don't think is a big surprise, but I think that is very telling when you think about that he missed a good part of spring with, like, I think it was like academic conflict, like a class schedule, something like that, that Kevin Bell was speaking to in our spring press that said he wasn't a full-time participant. The fact that he's still, you know, on the two deep in a really deep room, in a really deep group, I think that they really are looking at him to be kind of like that big body in the middle, and he has gained a little bit away from last season, so I expect him to break out. And then Deontay Craig, a name that we've said before as somebody who the coaching staff is looking at to really take that step forward and kind of be that pass rushing guy. That's a name that I'm really going to be looking to in fall camp and beyond to kind of make a name for himself and be kind of one of those breakout guys on the D-line. And then lastly, Cooper DeJean with Justin Jacobs, Cash Leo, and then the backup to Kayvon Merriweather at safety. So more position versatility for Cooper DeJean. I think he's also primed to make an impact this fall.
Yeah, Cooper DeJean certainly was a topic yesterday. The fact that he's listed at cash, Kennington, it leads me to believe he's going to be the cash guy. They don't list anybody else there. We thought maybe Sebastian Castro. Castro is not even on the depth chart. So that's interesting. And then, you know, we asked a lot of people asked Ferentz about Justin Jacobs. And I don't know. I just got the sense that, you know, his role is going to be pretty similar to last year. I don't think he's going to be I do think he's going to rotate in, but Iowa's probably going to use a lot of 4-3. But it also kind of tells me maybe DeJean, because you can't take DeJean off the field, I don't think. You know, if you go to 4-3, so does that mean DeJean slides back to safety? Does that bump Kayvon Merriweather in any way or Quinn Schulte? So that'll be interesting to watch, I guess, as the season progresses, because just based on what we heard yesterday, it seems like DeJean will be a big factor. Just 2 minutes left here, Kennington. One issue I wanted to bring up to our listeners is I talked to Bill Carollo, the director of officials from the Big Ten, regarding fake injuries, and that came up in the Penn State game last year, as we know. There's a new process this year. There won't be a penalty, won't be a timeout, won't be anything like that other than the player leaving the field. But there will be more of a stricter review process where, you know, could result in coaches' fines, condemnation, and they feel like if that doesn't work, then they're going to have to go to penalties, timeouts, that kind of thing. But it was kind of interesting to hear him just say that we know it happens, we know they coach it, and as officials, we don't want to – you know, we honestly don't want to penalize the kids, you know, to keep them out of a game if, you know, whatever, if their coaches are asking them to go down. And I don't know, it was just an interesting admission to me as we know what happened in that Penn State game last year, the you know, the smell a rat comment from Kirk Ferentz, the response from James Franklin. just something to watch this year. I know Iowa and Penn State don't play each other, but, you know, a little bit of a movement, I guess, on, you know, guys faking injuries to what we think is slowing down the tempo of a game.
Yeah, I think that is really interesting. I think that, you know, definitely the Ferentz Franklin back and forth is kind of like the main piece of this when you think about what happened last year, especially like in the Big Ten. That was like a really polarizing thing where Franklin kind of called like a presser just to address, you know, those comments and everything. And it is a very fine line to walk. I understand the referee's perspective because it's like, you know, there are some instances where there's accusations of faking injuries and kids really might be injured or, you know, you never want to just kind of like make a snap judgment and it's ultimately going to fall on you. As an official, if you make a if you throw a flag and the kid actually turns out to be injured and all that. So it is a very fine line to walk. But I do acknowledging that it's an issue and trying to do things to correct it and to add some more regulations to it because it is an issue in college sports. And it is something that needs to be corrected because that's something that, you know, ultimately like nobody wants to see and honestly shouldn't be coached at all, especially at this level.
Exactly. Thank you, Kennington. We'll say goodbye to you for now, my friend, but we'll see you soon, buddy. Take care.
All right. Thank you.
All right, day two of Big Ten Media Days featured two of Iowa's nemesis opponents in Wisconsin and Purdue. Coming up next, Tom Dienhart of Rivals.com, who covers the Boilermakers, will join me to discuss the Charlie Jones transfer, Jeff Brohm's mastery over the Hawkeyes, and what's expected in West Lafayette this season. That's next on Hawk Central, 1460 KXNO and 106.3 FM.
Everything you need to know about the Hawkeyes. It's Hawk Central with the Des Moines Register on 1460 KXNO.
Welcome back to Hawk Central Radio here on 1460 KXNO and 106.3 FM. Thank you to Kennington Smith for joining me on our first two segments here at Big Ten Media Days. Now we transition into what will be a kind of a fun conversation, I think, and entering into what's, I think, going to be an amazing rivalry this year. At least it's the heat is on for the Iowa-Purdue rivalry. A lot of talk from Iowa players on Tuesday about they might want a little revenge against the Boilermakers this year. And then, of course, Purdue has owned the Hawkeyes over the last 5 years under Jeff Brohm, 4-1. And to discuss that, I've got my friend, a tremendous journalist at Rivals.com, GoldenBlack.com, Tom Dienhart, formerly of the Big Ten Network. And you're chuckling.
nice introduction, Chad.
Appreciate that. We've had you on the show before, but yeah, I just want to talk some Purdue football here. Before we get into the Iowa transfers and Brohm's ownership of the Hawks, what do you expect from Purdue this year? I like Purdue. I like their schedule. You said fan attendance is off the charts or season tickets off the charts. It seems like there's a lot of buzz right now around this program to me.
Yeah, you're right. I did a story talking to one of the athletic directors about a week or so ago about season ticket sales, and they are at an all-time high right now. And single-game tickets have gone on sale recently, too. So that tells you, Chad, there's a lot of anticipation from the fan base, and rightly so. Purdue's coming off its first 9-win season since 2003, back when I had a full head of hair. And there's a lot of talent back, too, led by the quarterback, Aiden O'Connell. So I think that's another big reason for optimism. You talked about the schedule during the intro, and that certainly intrigues me. Mm-hmm. And provides a lot of opportunity for Purdue. I don't think there's a lot of heavy lifting there. Mm-hmm. A big one is the opener.
Yep.
September 1st, Thursday night.
Can't wait for that one.
Primetime Fox. Penn State's coming to Rossage Stadium. Penn State's about a 3.5-point favorite right now. They've got something to prove this year. They've only been 11-11 the last 2 years. So my point is, Chad, it looks like it's probably a beatable Penn State team.
Mm-hmm.
You know they want to win this game. You know they think they can win this game. Purdue obviously knows what it has at stake. If the Boilermakers can somehow come out on top, Chad, if you look at the look through September and into October, which we love to always look ahead as media members, right, there's a chance for Purdue to get off to a pretty good start.
Yeah, and of course, this is the year that the West has one home game and two road games. Remind our listeners who the two road games are against this year on the crossover slate.
Yeah, Purdue first only has six home games, six home, six road.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, okay. So now Purdue will go to Maryland, and they go to Indiana, yeah. And, of course, Penn State's at home. So
those are cross-division right there. Games. You go through. I mean, I picked Indiana last in the East. I think I picked Maryland next to last in the East. So. And I just, we've seen Purdue dice up good programs. You know, Iowa last year, Iowa multiple times, Ohio State, Michigan State last year. So we know Jeff Brohm can do it. And that leads me into my next question. What, you know, why do you think Jeff Brohm is, has Kirk Ferentz's number? Obviously, we go back to 2017 in Iowa City. They beat a pretty good Iowa team. Shortly after that, Iowa dismantled Ohio State that year. And then Purdue comes into Kinnick and beats Iowa by nine. There's been some weird games, some weird endings. And, of course, David Bell's been a factor. Why do you think Brohm has Iowa's number?
He finds, I guess, matchups that, that favor his wide receivers in particular. That 2017 game you talk about in Iowa City, he hit a couple of deep passes, I think, early in the second half.
Yes, that's right.
And, again, identifying matchups he thinks they can exploit. I know a lot of Purdue fans, Chad Orris, are kind of wondering, what is Phil Parker and Iowa's defense thinking with how they're trying to defend some of these receivers for Purdue? Phil Parker, I like Phil Parker a lot. I know Phil, and no disrespect, but you wonder. But again, I'm not going to argue with a guy who's won a lot of football games at Iowa. But again, doesn't seem like they made many adjustments defensively to what Purdue's trying to do when they're throwing the football. And Jeff Brohm's a pretty good X's and O's. So, yeah, he's always going to try to find mismatches that play to his advantage. And this year, Iowa comes to West Lafayette, right?
Yes, sir.
Yeah. And it'll be very interesting to see. That's obviously going to be a huge game to determine that pecking order in the Big Ten West.
Absolutely. And, of course, one of the storylines we're going to be following beyond Big Ten Media Days will be the how Charlie Jones and Tyrone Tracy Jr. perform at Purdue. Give us a sense of what you have heard from the Boilermakers, what you expect from both of those guys this year.
I talked to Coach Brohm a couple of days ago prior to getting here in Indy, and I get the feeling, Chad, that Charlie's going to start a wide receiver. I wouldn't be shocked if you see him out there. Of course, the return game, without a doubt. I'll be honest, that's been a black hole for Purdue for years. Just a total non-factor in the return game. And to have a big play, potential big play individual like that back there. I mean, you guys, I'm not telling Iowa fans anything they don't know.
Yeah, return specialist of the year in the conference. Yeah. I mean, that's quite a...
What a game changer.
Yeah, exactly.
So, I think maybe Charlie sees a chance to catch a lot of passes in this offense. He got an up-close look at the offense in recent years. He knows
it's
capable of as a wide receiver. There's some personal connections, I think, specifically with Aiden O'Connell. And he probably, I'm sure, knows Tyrone Tracy, so another Iowa transfer. So, yeah, I think both those kids, Tracy from Indianapolis and Charlie Jones from the Chicago area, I think they're both going to play pretty big roles for Purdue this year.
Tracy may be more of a hybrid role. That's what I had kind of
heard.
Yeah,
you know, Jeff Brohm's...
Is he a little coy on that still?
No, he's told me that they're going to try to kind of drib and drab him in the backfield.
Okay.
Sort of a Swiss Army knife. I'm not saying he's going to get 10 or 12 carries a game, but it sounds like he may get three or four chances to carry the ball, maybe a quick pitch, a jet sweep, quick end around, just hand him the ball, try to get him on the edge and make plays, right? I honestly think maybe they should just make him a full-time running back. They always struggle, Purdue does, to run the ball. They typically have no dynamic ability back there, and you have a guy like Tracy, who I know played running back in his youth.
Yep.
He could really be a dynamic option carrying the ball. But at this point, Chad, he's still going to be a receiver and sort of spotted in as a ball carrier.
Interesting. I'm sure that will probably evolve maybe over the course of the season we see the Iowa-Purdue matchup on November 5th in West Lafayette. That will be an incredible finishing stretch for the Hawkeyes. It's at Purdue, home against Wisconsin, at Minnesota, home against Nebraska. That's Iowa's November. So certainly they want to set the stage for that gauntlet. But Iowa players that I talked to yesterday, Tom, said, exhibited a lot of motivation for Purdue this year. They were kind of embarrassed how they played last year against the Boilermakers. Obviously, the Hawks were 6-0. And Purdue came into Kinnick and took them apart. Hawk fans celebrate the fact that David Bell's gone now. But do you see any – I mean, is there any – I don't know. Is it a what do Purdue fans or players think of kind of Iowa? Is that did they see this as kind of a brewing rivalry, or is it more from the Iowa side right now?
I think it's a rivalry. For years, Iowa owned Purdue. I mean, I grew up in West Lafayette. I got deep roots there. Been going to games since the 70s. And, you know, there was a point where Iowa could never beat Purdue for about 20 years. And Hayden Fry arrives in 1979. Of course, the script flips. Total dominance. So, and then Kirk Ferentz has continued that, obviously, until recently.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think they look at it as a rival. Anybody in the Big Ten West, especially a team like Iowa that's always a sort of a bar setter, a tone setter in that division, you got to beat Iowa if you want to try to win the Big Ten West. That's every team's goal in that division. So you're always chasing Iowa and Wisconsin, I think. And Purdue's had that success against Iowa we've talked about.
Mm-hmm.
But, Chad, the Badgers, my goodness, it's 15 losses in a row for Purdue to Wisconsin.
Is that right?
The most they've ever lost in a row to any opponent. Going back to 2003, Purdue's got to go to Madison this year. So that's a hill Purdue just can't get over.
Wow, interesting. So last question, Tom. Really appreciate it. Tom Deanhart, Rivals.com, covers Purdue. One of the top journalists here in Indianapolis. How do you see the Big Ten West shaking out? Have you made your predictions yet? What do you got? What do you think happens this season?
Yeah, I was part of that Cleveland.com poll, and I have the Badgers at top.
Okay.
I always got a default to Wisconsin, right? I know they've got their warts.
Yeah.
You wonder about the quarterback play, Graham Mertz and whatnot. And I think I had Iowa second. I had Purdue third. Minnesota fourth. Was the pecking order. And then Nebraska, you know, Nebraska's a team I had still in the lower part. And then Northwestern and Illinois. And some people think Northwestern could be terrible.
Yeah.
We'll see. You know, they've been on that every other year trend with 18 and 20. They won the division. And then the other two years, they tanked it. But Nebraska's the team that, as you've seen, leading up to this point, has been a media darling. So I was a little surprised when you saw that poll this week to see Nebraska just picked fourth. But again, I think it's Wisconsin's division to lose again with teams like Iowa, Minnesota, and Purdue being in that next rung with a chance maybe to surprise.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a great race in the Big Ten West. Appreciate you offering the insight on the Boilermakers, Tom Deanhart. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Chad.
See you, buddy. All right, that'll do it for tonight's episode of Hawk Central. Tune in next week. I think we're going to have tight ends coach Abdul Hodge on the show. We will have all that and more next week on Hawk Central, 1460 KXNO and 106.3 FM. Good night, everyone.